This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. And welcome to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. I am your host, Shane Told, and let me tell you, man, I've had a couple weeks of some craziness, and right now I'm sitting here, I'm recording this. Oh, we got a great episode today with Dan Lampton of Real Friends, by the way. I'm sitting here, the sun is shining, I hear the birds singing, man, like, it has been a very, very, very long winter. And finally it's like, yes, spring is here. It's going to be 23 degrees. That's Celsius tomorrow. What is that in Fahrenheit? Like 75-ish? 72? I don't know what it is. Anyways, it's going to be a beautiful day tomorrow. I'm excited. We got baseball back. As I'm sure some people might know, I am a gigantic baseball fan, a huge Toronto Blue Jays fan. They're off to a bit of a slow start, but I think they're going to come around. It's still early. We got basketball playoffs, hockey playoffs. Basically, this is just my favorite time of the year, and I'm so excited and just trying to stay positive for the future and everything that's coming up with me. Also, patio beers. That's going to happen tomorrow. Very, very, very excited. Anyways, I'm very, very glad that you're here with me. You're listening to this. And of course, if you ever want to get in touch, to give me some kind words, words of encouragement, or, you know, suggestions for the show, feel free. We have lots of ways you can do that. We're on Twitter. It's at LeadSingerSyn, S-Y-N. We're on Instagram, at LeadSingerSyndrome. And of course, you can just simply email me, which is LeadSingerSyndrome@gmail.com. We got the hate line open, 657-666-HATE. Going to be running some clips at some point, but man, right now, just too much positivity in my life. I can't go for a hate line episode yet, but it's going to happen. So keep the hate coming. I love the hate. Also, go like us on Facebook. I think you can search and it'll pop up somewhere. And we're about to start the Lead Singer Syndrome VIP fan club, whatever you want to call it. And that's coming soon. So please, if you have suggestions for that and what you'd like to see, send me an email or hit me up on whatever social media, because we're putting that together right now, and we want it to be awesome, and we want everyone to be stoked, and I'm excited about it. So get in touch with me, and there'll be way more news about that very shortly. Another thing, too, while I have you, I actually got a book. It's by my favorite band of all time. They put out a book. Well, they're called NOFX. I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with them. The book is called The Hepatitis Bathtub and Other Stories. This is not an ad. This is just what I've been reading. And I gotta say, man, like, I know a lot of people listen to this show because, you know, I talk to other lead singers about, you know, the stuff that people don't talk about in regular interviews, you know? And NOFX put out this book and it's gnarly. Like, the stories in this thing are crazy. And I think they're all true, to be honest with you. But if you guys are looking for a real tell-all book that's, you know, more about punk rock than, like, Motley Crue The Dirt, which is a great book, too. But this is kind of like the punk rock version of Motley Crue's book, The Dirt. So check out the NOFX book if you are so inclined. It's very eye-opening and definitely gives you a very, very crazy, like, account of sometimes, you know, the things that go on behind the scenes, you know, in a punk rock band. I will say one more thing while I have you too. If you want to support the show, if you ever buy anything on Amazon, it's real easy. Go to leadsingersyndrome.com/Amazon. It takes you right to the Amazon homepage. Log in as usual. Buy whatever crap you're going to buy. We get 4% of whatever it is. So if you spend $100, we get $4. It all adds up. So check that out. leadsingersyndrome.com/Amazon. Anyways, I'm going to get into it now. Here's my conversation with Dan from Real Friends. It was really, really great. He's just a great dude, honest, and, you know, we talk about a few things that, like, I think some people in the scene might be scared to talk about, you know, safety at shows and this whole incident with Parker and Story So Far. And, you know, one thing is I'm not going to sugarcoat what I think about it, you know, and I'm going to be honest with you guys. And I think that's why you guys listen to this podcast and some of you listen week after week after week. And that means so much to me. So thanks again. Here it is, my talk with Dan Lampton of Real Friends.
I can't believe you've got the nerve to say you love me when you left me for dead. I don't love you anymore. I hope you're happy since I don't know you anymore. You were a part of me, and now you're just nothing but a memory.
No matter. I'm here with Dan Lampton of Real Friends. How are you today, sir?
I am very good because we are not dealing with any more complete bullshit weather here in Chicago, because we've had everything between, like, technically you use a different measurement of, like, weather and stuff in
Canada. Wow, you actually did your research. You know that I'm Canadian. There we go.
Yes. Oh.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, and I've talked about this on the podcast, so people are probably like, oh, God, you always talk about this, but we kind of do both here, to be honest.
Oh, really? Like, you do Fahrenheit also?
Well, it depends what you're talking about. Like, if you're talking about the temperature of a pool, you always go Fahrenheit. I don't know why. But, like, you know, I know, like a swimming pool temperature, like, if it's, like, 85, that's, like, real nice, you know?
Yeah, that's really weird.
But in Celsius, I don't even know. I guess I can do the conversion. That's, like, 30 or something. But, it's kind of weird. We do both.
Yeah, but, I mean, we've had sleet and shit, and now it's nice and sunny, and I'm sitting outside here talking to you on the phone, and it's nice instead of having to be under three blankets in my room. But
I'm in Toronto right now, and yeah, it's a beautiful day here. And like the other day, it was hailing randomly.
Yep, same here.
Like, what the fuck? But yeah, apparently this weekend, I mean, I assume our weather's not too dissimilar, I guess. You know,
yeah.
Chicago, Toronto, both like very big, very cold cities.
Yeah, also not too far from each other, so.
No, not really. But apparently this weekend's going to be awesome, so getting stoked on that.
Me as well.
Yeah, dude. Nice. So, yeah, you guys are off for a bit.
Yes.
Which for Real Friends is like a rare occurrence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is our first time. Well, I mean, we had a couple months off in the winter, like from like end of November to like early January to be home. But we were spending all that time like wrapping up the record. So it was like we were kind of like only halfway here, you know? So it's nice to finally have time where, you know, record's done, like, and all we're doing is just, you know, random little interviews, press stuff. And, you know, it's really easy going, and it's nice to finally be able to, you know, work, go nonstop, tour and write for a year, and then just kind of have that time to ourselves now and just chill
because
at home.
Cause it's going to start up again when this record drops in May, and it's going to be insane again for you guys.
Yep. Gonna do Slam Dunk. Very stoked on that. And then Warped Tour.
The whole damn thing, right?
Whole damn thing.
What are your thoughts on Warped Tour? And I mean, just the whole being in the heat every day, like, you know, having to haul your shit or whatever it is. I mean, you guys are on the main stage, so you don't have to haul your shit anymore.
Yeah.
But like, how do you feel about Warped Tour? Are you going into it? Are you excited, or are you more like dreading the difficult parts of it?
I am very stoked. This will be my 10th year going to Warped Tour, being a part of it to some sort of capacity. So I'm really, really fucking stoked on that. It's not too bad for us. I mean, we'll be in a bandwagon, so we'll be having, you know, air conditioning and a place to retreat every day, which, you know, it won't be as grueling as some other people will have it. Because I mean, the first time we did Warped in 2013, granted, we only did like 2.5 weeks. We did all the West Coast dates, but we did it in a van, and so to an extent, I can understand how terrible it is to do it in a van.
I know. I could never do it, man. It's funny you said the thing about, you know, you've been a part of Warped Tour either as like a fan or as a band for 10 years. And I have a similar story. I've been going or playing every year since 1997.
Holy shit. That is so sick.
Yeah. So I guess this year we aren't playing, but I'll definitely check it out. I guess it'll be my 20th year then that I've gone. Yeah. Isn't that insane?
That is so crazy.
Yeah, and I mean, I love Warped Tour, and you know, I know there are people say, like, there's all this shit, like, last year about people in the safe environment and stuff, and I think that discussion is important.
Of course.
To have, absolutely, but I think at its core, Warped Tour is important, you know, to what we do, and yeah. It's a great way for kids to, you know, be able to go and experience a lot of bands for a relatively cheap price.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is with Warped Tour, because I've always been able to have it be a safe place, and it was something every year I looked forward to it, you know, more so than Christmas, any sort of holiday. You know, Warped Tour was my Christmas, you know, and that's somewhere, you know, where, like I said, you know, like you go for one day and you don't have to fucking deal with any of your problems. You leave that all at the door when you go in, and you get to see some of your favorite bands. You know, sometimes for me, it would be, you know, maybe like 10, 12, 15 bands I'd want to see. Sometimes it was only three, but I always felt that the ticket price justified it to some extent. But the thing is that when you have certain issues that happen and come up in the scene, you know, that kind of infringes on other people's safety and, you know, how, you know, because I think that everybody should be able to enjoy it, not just, you know, all of the white male people. You know, it should be something that everybody should be able to take enjoyment from. So to have things like that happened last year with like Front Porch Step being on it and stuff, that kind of, you know, it makes people feel unsafe to a degree. And that, you know, that's not something that, you know, you want happening in that world. You know, you want people to, you know, feel welcome and feel like they can be there without anything happening to them.
Absolutely. Well, I think it's more important, you know, all the time that this stuff is being talked about. I mean, like the most recent thing, like you talk about safety to show, and I know, like, I think I was reading somewhere you guys saying it was like a joke. You said like a PSA about, you know, no onstage selfies.
Oh yeah.
You know? And, I mean, you've heard the latest news, you know, with the story so far and everything.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, you talk about safety at shows and stuff, like, you know, being assaulted by a singer. I mean, what's your take on that whole situation?
Well, me personally, yeah, I don't like, onstage selfies, but, we've had like, we've played shows. Like, I remember there was one time, we played at the Oakland Metro in Oakland, California. And, there was a kid that was, we were on tour with the Wonder Years, and, at that day it was for a mixtape festival, and it had combined tour packages with a tour that Comeback Kid was doing. And,
cool.
Backtrack had played right before us. Last song of their set, there was a kid that had done a flip into the crowd. Nobody caught him. And then, he ended up landing on his neck and having a seizure, and just like, you know, the show was stopped, ambulance was called, people were freaking out, like, what the fuck? And to see something like that happen, well, obviously, thankfully, like, the girl didn't get hurt, you know? But, you know, like, stuff like that can't happen, and to have that be kind of instigated and brought about by somebody, like, in the band, you know, that they're going to see, is kind of worrisome, you know? That's another thing, you know, you know, because kids want to be able to go there and feel safe, you know, same with women, you know, they want to be able to be there and exist in this space without having people beat the shit out of them or look at them differently just because their girl is trying to enjoy the same thing that we all enjoy. You know, we all have a right to be there and get away from all the bullshit that we have to deal with.
Exactly. Oh, let's wait for that to go by.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I live down the street from a hospital, so that happens from time to time.
No problem. You live in Chicago?
I live in the south suburbs. Like, I'm like right on the border of the city. Like, you walk walk like a couple blocks away from my house, you'll technically be in Chicago.
Okay, yeah, cool. Anyways, back to what we were saying now that the ambulance went by.
Yeah.
Well, the incident happened here in Toronto, actually. So, I mean, here it's big news. Like, everyone is talking about it, and I'm not sure if that's just, you know, because I'm here or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like, I was a little surprised that it wasn't a little more cut and dried, you know, with like, some people were like, well, she shouldn't have been on the fucking stage, you know, and you shouldn't be taking a selfie, which to me, it's like, well, okay, well, where do you draw the line? Like, what's okay? You know? And obviously, like we, I don't know what you guys call them. We call them stage potatoes.
Yeah, yeah. Come, stage, yeah. And they just sit there.
And it's like every band, I guess, deals with those people differently. I mean, obviously, like, if you're talking about a No Barricade show, people are going to come on the stage and you know what you're getting into.
Yeah.
What does your band do for in that situation?
I mean, normally we have our merch guy, Dan, that nowadays he'll sit on the side of the stage and, you know, kind of go up, tap those kids, be like, yo, you got to fucking go, you
right.
know, like try to handle it in, you know, kind of a fashion where nobody gets hurt. And it's just kind of like, OK, you know, there's a difference between, you know, coming up on stage, taking like just 2 seconds being up there, maybe saying a couple words and then jumping off. That's fine. But then when you're standing there blocking people's view and then just being in the way, sometimes it can be distracting. And then also I feel like when you bring like selfies into the equation, like I feel like that's a slap in the face.
Absolutely.
Because at least like with me and the rest of our band, like we try to like meet kids after the show and stuff. And like there's a time and place for everything. You know, and
sure.
I feel like that's best to take care of, like, after the show, because then to me, in that instance, it makes it seem like you care more about having a selfie to post on the internet than actually being at that show.
Right. Or the song I'm currently singing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like what's more important to you, you know?
Yeah.
No, absolutely. You know, I just always ask because, you know, I've seen bands, crew, you know, like guys be aggressive. I've seen band members push, you know, kids back into the crowd, and you know that's with our band. I don't even if there's a drunk dude like with his putting me in a headlock. Like I still wouldn't push him off me into the crowd. You know what I mean? I feel like there's no real. I don't know. I feel like you've got to do better as a band member.
Yeah,
you know your influence is important to people, and I think displaying any kind of violence is completely unacceptable. But
well, yeah,
I just wanted to get your take. You know, because. You know, some I don't really know Parker at all or anything, but I'm sure you do. You guys
yeah.
probably toured together. You guys are like definitely in the same kind of world. You know, so I don't know like his take or if he said anything, but I was pretty disappointed.
Yeah, well, because the thing is that people, you know, people look up to us and stuff, and I think that's sometimes things that we don't necessarily. Acknowledge as much as we should, and maybe it's not intentional, you know, because we don't want to let it get to our heads and, you know, have big egos about it, but because sometimes it doesn't necessarily show kids that that's like a good way to even treat women, you know, in some aspects, and to have them see
right.
somebody that they look up to treat women in that regard, you know, it's not as they say in the biz, it's not a good look. You know,
yes, in the biz.
Yeah, because this is like I said, you know, it's a place for everybody. You know, it doesn't matter your gender or gender identity, like your sexuality or your race or anything. It just matters that you're there, you know, because we all collectively go there every night. You know, it might be a different venue or seeing a different band, but it's that same like. Mindset, that same space that, you know, that you get into, like when you listen to your favorite record or your favorite band, you know, for that
yeah.
5 minutes, half hour, hour, you know, or if you're playing it on repeat, you know, so to, you know, people, forgot where I was going with that.
That's all right.
But you know, it's something that everybody should be able to experience, you know, and cause there are a lot of things that we don't get to choose about ourselves, you know, and I don't think that people should be punished for that.
No, absolutely not, man. Well, shifting gears a little bit, this $5 tour thing, I got to ask you about that because
mm-hmm.
obviously, you know, we do the same kind of thing. We're singers in bands, and I looked at the venues and everything, and logistically, that must have been such a pain in the ass for your booking agent and for you guys to figure out. I mean, not just the fact that you're only selling tickets for $5 and like where's the money coming from, but also just like where are you going to put a stage when you're playing in like a fucking batting cage? You know what I
yeah.
mean?
Well, we didn't.
So how
didn't
was
stage.
That tour? Yeah, I mean, you're playing on the floor. I get it, but
yeah.
like, how did that? Okay, where did that idea come from? And how was it?
I honestly can't remember where the idea came from, but what I take from it is that, like, because we played, like for instance, the Batting Cages in Philadelphia that you brought up, like, that's a DIY venue that has shows there regularly and stuff.
Oh, okay.
And we have a lot of younger fans, like, I feel like between, like, you know, 14 to 16, 17 and stuff. And I think that maybe some of them might not have had an opportunity to experience, like, those skate shops, VFW halls, churches, batting yeah. cages, what have you. Then, you know, maybe they need that little push to discover it. And hopefully now that they've seen us play at those venues, you know, maybe that's the first step through the door for them to go back and maybe check out a local show there or see which other bands are playing there or seek out like those house shows and smaller shows that are going on in their area and stuff, you know, because I remember going to see bands at the Oaklawn Pavilion by my house, just seeing like local bands and shit with one of my friends because his mom worked for the Village and, you know, she helped put shows on and stuff over there. And you know, so if we can get kids started on that, then fuck yeah.
Well, that's the thing, man. Like where I grew up here, you know, Toronto suburbs, we had an insane scene. Like we had so many shows and I mean the scene, I thought it was like this everywhere. I know Chicago suburbs had a great scene back in the day too.
Yeah.
You know, like with like Spitalfield and Fall Out Boy and all that, you know. But like, I mean, is the local scene dead? Like, does this still exist? Because it's obviously not the same as it was, you know, like 10 to 15 years ago.
Yeah.
At all. But, like, in your opinion, you still think that that's viable and it's still happening with, you know, VFW shows and everything? Are you seeing that a lot?
The local scene is definitely still happening. I don't necessarily think to the same extent that it was like 10 years ago because yeah. we don't really have any venues in like the south suburbs where I live.
Right.
We used to have Mojo's, which I'm sure have you guys ever played there?
Mojo's. I don't know.
Yeah, well that was like our prominent venue on the south side. It's in Tinley Park or it used to be in Tinley Park and then they moved it to Joliet a few years ago and now I think it just shut down. But but you know, we don't have any venues here, so then we started booking at a bowling alley called Centennial Lanes, not far from where our bass player Kyle lives.
Right.
And because like Kyle started setting up shows there, now there's promoters and stuff that have been putting shows together there, and there have been house shows popping up. So the scene's going, but
that's good.
I feel like it doesn't have like a venue to exist at though, like just one consistent place. I feel like, you know,
right. Well, it's really cool though what you did. It's really cool what you guys did, like starting this out again, like starting it from the grassroots level. You know, to be a big band like you guys are, and to do that is like. Kind of insane, you know, kind of an insane thing to do. But I think it's cool. And I think hopefully the local scene isn't dead and it's getting resurrected and it's going to be, you know, a bigger thing very soon, you know.
Yeah.
And that can be something that, you know, I don't know where I would be. Like I never had, when I started a band, I never had like dreams and aspirations of playing arenas or anything. Like for me, it was like, I want to play a good show. You know, down at the, you know, we don't have VFW halls in Canada, but we have an equivalent kind of thing, you know, like a hall show on the floor. Like that was what my aspirations were. And now it must be weird when you start a band and kids are like, no, I want to like start a band and go on tour and then play Warped Tour. And then it's like,
yeah,
such a strange, like, priority of like goals, I guess.
Yeah. Well, cause people think that sometimes they don't think that they actually have to put in any work. Which is a shame.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I remember I was in a band in high school where the people that I was with thought that, you know, like, oh yeah, we're going to go from A to Z with nothing in between, you know, everything, like it's just going to happen. Like there's no game plan for anything. Like we're not going to save our money or we're not going to like plan out our, like to have weekends off of our jobs so we can go, like play shows in neighboring states and stuff and like try to, you know, build our band like we did with Real Friends. It was just kind of like, oh yeah, we're just gonna try to write some music and not worry about anything, and then everything else will just happen because that's how everything works, you know.
Right.
Because I feel like, because sometimes, you know, it's awesome that, that people in, like, younger bands want to, like, jump to touring, but, you know, it's not necessarily the smartest thing, because you want to make sure that you, that, like, if that's what you want to do, that, like, you have money saved up so you can continue doing it and, you know, have something for yourself to spend and not have to rely on the band, you know, necessarily making money at first. And
sure.
And you have to make sure that sometimes, like, if you're going to go out on a limb and go out on tour, like, far away for the first time and your band's not too big, like, you want to make sure that people, like, actually want to see you so that you're not, like, losing your money and stuff.
Absolutely. I mean, you got to work on your craft too. You know, you got to get better.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to play your first show, you know, your first 10 shows to be, you know, on tour. You know, you have to, like, work at your craft and get better. Otherwise, you're going to get in front of a bunch of people and not be very good.
Yeah.
And then people are going to say, well, I saw that band and they weren't very good, and they might not give you a second chance.
Yeah. First impression's everything.
That's right. That's right. That's right. So I heard you, you're quitting smoking. Is this going well?
Yes, yes. I quit smoking cigs. I am a little over a month.
Beautiful.
Now.
Dude, good for you, man.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it's a little difficult, but it's been good so far. I'm holding in there.
Do you think it's going to improve or change the way you sing? Like at all?
I think it'll definitely help. I need to get back into exercising again.
Right.
Because when I had a 4 month period where I had quit smoking, I was exercising. We went out on tour with Census Fail. It was like early 2013, and I think that was the best I'd ever sounded. And you know, I think that was the healthiest I'd been. And I definitely think because I started exercising when we got back home, but then I got sick and I stopped. So
right.
Now that I'm getting better, I'm going to get back in the swing of it, and hopefully, you know, come Warped Tour, I'll be back in full force.
Well, good for you, man. No, that's
Thank
a beautiful
you.
Thing. Speaking of your voice and the way you sing, do you have problems on tour losing your voice and stuff? Cause like you belt it out, you know,
yeah.
You fucking belt it out. So I'm just curious.
I have a lot of sinus problems when we're out west. I don't have a definite diagnosis, but I think that I have a deviated septum from having my nose broken when I was in high school. So I actually next month I have an ENT appointment to get that sorted out and looked at. But
well, the smoking can't help either, right?
The smoking definitely doesn't. But I every once in a while I do. We changed over to using in-ear monitors within the last few months, and that definitely helped a lot because my sound was more consistent every night instead of having to put in my earplugs and then hope that, you know, the monitor situation each night would pan out and work really well. Cause we have like a Behringer X32 rack unit that, and we just control each of our individual ears from like an app on our phone and stuff. So it's super handy. And that helps me a ton. Definitely when I'm out west, my voice starts to get a little raspy just because of how dry it is, and I'm more prone to getting sinus infections. But now that I've quit smoking, hopefully that helps subside it.
The in-ear monitor thing's interesting, right? Like, we've been on them for years, and I remember the first time I used them, like the first show, I was like, this is so fucking weird. I feel like this awful disconnect from the crowd. You know, and it took me a lot of time getting used to it. Did you find that too, or were you pretty stoked on it right away?
I definitely noticed that. Something that did help though was because when we first started using them, we were on tour with Mayday Parade, and they had their sound guy had crowd mics set up that he let us use, so that kind of helped to get to hear the kids and everything, if they were singing and reacting to it. But, I definitely know what you mean. Cause it drowns out so much sound, and it's so isolating.
And you're hearing is like your own voice, and it's like, you know, you feel a lot more self-conscious, I guess, because it's like even if you're a little out of off key,
you hear everything.
At least you can't. Well, I mean, when you don't have very good monitors, it's like it doesn't matter as much because you can't hear it, and you don't really think about the other people if they can hear it and if it's good or bad. It's more just like, at least that's how I feel about it, you know. And then now it's like everything is like your voice is under such a microscope.
Yeah.
You notice? Did anyone come up to you when you started using monitors in your ears and be like, "Whoa, that's like the best you've ever sang"? Like, did like fans and stuff?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely helped. Yeah, I've gotten some compliments on it helps a lot. Shit, what was I gonna say? I'm drawing a blank.
That's all right.
But no, yeah, it has definitely helped save me a lot.
Yeah, dude, that's awesome. Yeah, and I have to ask you this question, because I was I was doing a little bit of research, watching some YouTube videos, and I saw this fucking hilarious, it was so funny to me, that Dave in your band, and it's like a 10 things you didn't know about Real Friends.
Uh-huh.
And Dave's like, "I hate coins. If I see a coin, I throw it away." And I'm that is the most, like, that is the weirdest thing I've maybe ever heard of.
Oh, yeah, he hates
so
change.
What is the deal with that?
I don't know. He doesn't like money. Well, physical money. Like,
yes,
because
it's dirty, I guess.
Yeah, he just doesn't.
But specifically change.
Yeah, change. I don't think he'll tolerate bills. Last I checked, but yeah, coins, no. Like, he'll say keep the change or he'll give it to someone else. Put it in the little take a penny, leave a penny thing. Like,
right.
Yeah. God, fuck. Who? What? I can't remember who it was. God, this is going to bother me. But there was one band that we were touring with. They one day on the side of the stage, I think they were just throwing pennies at him while we were playing.
man.
And like, he was not having it. It's going to really fucking bother me because I can't think of who it is. And of course, once we're off the phone, then I'll remember it. But
that's the way it works, sure. Yeah, no, I just had to ask you that. I thought it was so funny, man.
Yeah, it's his kryptonite.
And yeah, and kind of random, but okay, man. Hey, let's talk about the new record, May 27th, coming out, The Home Inside My Head.
Yes.
I know Kyle writes a lot of the lyrics in the band. Was that the case on this record as well, or did you have more of a hand?
I did. I had about 6 songs that I'd written lyrics for the album, 4 of which made it, and then the other 2 are B-sides. But yes, I did have a lyrical contribution this time around.
Yeah, so how does that work? Because, you know, I write a lot of the music in my band too, and I write pretty much all of the melodies and lyrics, but I always wondered how it would work if somebody gave me lyrics. If, like, does he doesn't write the melodies, does he? Or does he write the songs? Or does he just gives you like a book of words? You kind of play around with it, or you work together on it?
Like, well, what we do as a whole is that our guitar players, Dave and Eric, will get together with Kyle, and they'll throw ideas around for demos, get it in GarageBand with some MIDI drums on there, and then Kyle will write the lyrics and then send both of those over to me, and then I'll get like a bass line, melody in there. And I just, like, what I'll do is I'll just look at each line of lyrics and then like listen to it while I'm, or read it while I'm listening to the music. And then, if any like melodies pop up just reading it, like, I don't know, like,
right.
I'll kind of read it like I would a melody, or just see if anything comes to mind. And then, sometimes I'll have like a little melody that, that doesn't necessarily fit like the cadence of the wording. So then I'll edit the, like, I'll paraphrase basically like what he's saying, and technically write new lyrics sometimes that say the same exact thing, but
right. But
yeah,
it's his idea, right?
Yeah. But for the most part, it's usually I'll just like maybe like do like a word here and there that I'll switch out for something else just because it'll sound, you know, a little more pleasant. But for the most part, yeah, he would just send it over, and then I'd just pick lines and certain chunks, like, because sometimes, like, he would say, like, he'd hear, like, these couple lines being the first verse, these couple lines being the chorus, and, like, you know, sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. And then, like, I'll before this record, I would put my phone in one corner of the room. I'd have my speakers in another corner of the room, and then I'd be in another corner of the room, and I'd record voice memos on my phone me, like, of each part, and, like, send them over to Kyle and be like, oh, yo, like, what do you think of this? And, like, I just hope that he can, like, hear everything and know what I'm saying and which lines I'm using and, like, which part it is, you know. And I feel like that necessarily didn't give us 100% idea of, like, the whole song.
No, you're good.
Because sometimes it felt like you couldn't, like, understand some parts in the context of the entire song. So, like, this time around, like, I bought a laptop, I have a MacBook, and I got Logic, and I would do my vocal demos on that, and then I'm able to just bounce out that certain chorus or that verse, send him just an MP3 of that, and then it's a lot. And then once I'm done with the song, then we can listen to the whole song as one piece instead of, like, these little tiny shitty sounding fragments that I recorded on my iPhone, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I mean, I think, like, the way you guys write words and melodies, I think it makes your band kind of unique sounding. Like, you know, in some ways, like I don't know how, I don't mean to be insulting, but, or I'm not really sure what I'm trying to say, I guess, but, like, sometimes when I listen to your band, and I really enjoyed your last record.
Thank you.
Sometimes it seems like you're trying to squeeze in a line that doesn't fit, but not in a bad way. Like, sometimes I'll hear it and I'll be like, wow, that's like
a mouthful
or a big statement. But, like, of course you're singing like full out. And you can tell that the words are meaningful and passionate, so it ends up, like, giving your band this kind of, like, different sound. Like, do you listen to the Hold Steady?
I have, but not regularly.
Like, you know, the Hold Steady style of, like, it's almost like talking over, you know, a lot of words talking over music, but that's their thing, right? Like, for you guys, it almost gives you this sound where you're like, it's like, it's almost like if you throw words away too much, then you're losing what you're saying. So it's important that you're saying the whole line that's written the way it is.
Yeah.
And then you make it fit. It's just, sometimes it's like, it seems, I don't want to say forced, cause that's a bad word, but
yeah,
it gives you guys a very unique sound. I don't know if you've ever thought about that or noticed.
I haven't. No.
Well, I got to hear the new record and see the direction you took. Who did you record?
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Word with.
We recorded, we did some co-writing for the first time with Mike Green.
Oh, okay.
Who's,
I know Mike Green.
And I found out that, like, he did work with, like, Set Your Goals and, like, The Matches and stuff. Those bands are absolutely incredible. So we did that for the first time. We did three songs with him that ended up on the record, and then we did about 11 songs with Steve Evitz, and that was our first time working with the producer and doing any sort of co-writing, because everything else before this record, like, we'd recorded with a friend of ours that had a studio about an hour away from us in Crown Point, Indiana, and everything was, you know, pretty much just self-produced, and, like, our friend Seth would throw in ideas every once in a while, and little edits here and there with, like, vocal melodies and stuff, but nothing, like, we never did pre-production before this record and stuff, so.
Wow, yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, so to experience that for the first time and was kind of weird, like, having, like, because we just booked
Absolutely.
5 days in a rehearsal studio, just us and Steve sitting there, and then we didn't really know what to expect at first, but once we started getting into everything, we started, like, I mean, first day, like, you know, we'd start like more physically getting into music, jumping around and stuff, and seeing Steve like getting into everything and was really reassuring. And you know, he had just this this energy, and he just really gave a shit about the record, which was, you know, really reassuring. Like, it was
really
cool.
Like, your band is right in his wheelhouse, you know. I mean, like, I think of you guys, of, you know, you guys have some faster stuff, some Double Time, and obviously Steve Evitz is known for like his old work, you know, with like Saves the Day and Lifetime and stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's like he's a perfect producer for you guys.
Yeah, and he's all over the place. So to have somebody that can work on stuff like Saves the Day and Lifetime, but then also do like every Dillinger record, like
yeah,
Every Time
true.
I Die records, and
yes.
Snapcase, like he's just all over the place. So it's nice to have somebody that has like that resume and has just such like a diverse taste. You know,
yeah, co-write's really interesting because we've never done it, and I feel like I don't know if I could do it. I feel like I would. I'm too much of a control freak.
Yeah.
To be able to give someone else, I don't know what it is. So how was that? Like, how did that work for your band? Like, was everybody into it, or did it cause some conflict?
No, we were all pretty into it. Because it was brought up by Fearless, like they were just like, "Yo, do you want to try this out?" And you know, we thought, you know what the hell, you know, why
sure,
not?
Yeah.
You know, at least
right.
Say, you know, because if it doesn't work out, then we don't have to use the songs, you know.
Exactly.
And but Eric, Dave, and Kyle were in there for a couple days because we flew out to California, and then I showed up a few days later to like work on melodies and stuff, and I mean, everything went off without a hitch. You know, they got along.
Great.
We all got along with Mike really well. And then, like, when it came to do melodies, like, it was the same thing. Like, we just had, like, Kyle brought two sets of lyrics to the table. I brought one. And then, like, Mike and I would just sit there, look, like, reading the lyrics while we listened to the music. And, you know, it was, like, the same thing that I do by myself when I'm putting the Real Friends melodies together just with one other person in the room, you know?
Yeah.
And he had a lot of really good ideas, you know, because sometimes he'd be humming something and then I would take that idea that he had and build on it, or I'd have something and then he'd start, you know, building. And it was really productive.
That's awesome. That's
yeah.
Awesome.
So I have nothing really bad to say about it. It was a good experience, I think, for us. And it was really good to see how, you know, someone else writes music.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I think with music, you're constantly learning, you know. I think if you ever stop trying to learn more about the art and the craft of making music, I think that's when you start writing and making shitty music. That's
yeah.
What I think. So it's really good that you guys are continuing to push yourself and everything. I want to ask you about your side project you started with some of the dudes from Knuckle Puck.
Okay.
Rationale. I just saw it when it came out, and I was like, really, that guy wants to start a side project? Like, isn't he so busy already? Like, is this a good idea? That's what I was thinking to myself. But the tunes are great.
Yeah.
Is there anything else happening with that? Or is it just kind of like on hold right now with Real Friends just being crazy?
We're gonna write a little more for it now that we have time off and stuff. And now that we're gonna be on Warped with Knuckle Puck and stuff. So that'll give us plenty of time. But I mean, that was just something, you know, fun to do in our free time, because like when I met Joe, like I met Joe after Real Friends, like it was pretty early on in both Real Friends and Knuckle Puck, and
yeah,
you know, and we met because, you know, of the music scene around here in Chicago, and we only, like, the only reason that we had met was because we were in bands and we liked each other's bands and stuff. And, you know, there was one day he hit me up to go hang out at their guitar player Nick's house. And I sang on an acoustic version of one of their songs. And then ever since, we've been, you know, like basically best friends. And
cool.
And then one day we were driving around hanging out, and I just asked him, I was like, yo, like, would you want to do a band together sometime? And then over, like, we wrote like four songs over the course of like a year and a half, like just when we had free time. So it it was definitely nothing that was necessary. Like, because Real Friends is number one,
and of course,
number one for me, and then Knuckle Puck for Joe and Ryan are number one, and then Ryan's also got another band that he's in called Home Safe. But you know, we all got our other stuff, and you know, we only do it because you know we hang out and we enjoy playing music together, and you know, we're just celebrating music because I was able to make some of my best friends because of playing in this band and because of the local scene that we have. So, like, Rationale is just a celebration of that.
That's awesome, man. No, I think that's really cool. I started a little solo project of my own a few months back too, and it's yeah, it is nice to have a little another outlet, you know, creatively for other things.
Yeah, because you know you're just doing it to and it's not to downplay, like, you know, Real Friends or like Silverstein, but it's like, you know, it's something that you can like necessarily like not have to take as seriously, if that makes sense.
It makes sense. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, because I feel like it is different, like working on Real Friends stuff as opposed to working on like Rationale stuff. Definitely a different mindset. But you know, it's because that's I feel like more just doing it for the sake of doing it, like just because, you know, if that makes any sense.
I completely get. I feel you, dog. I feel you. It absolutely makes sense. How about time for the lightning round? What do you think?
Okay.
It's not a real thing. The lightning round is not a thing.
What does that entail?
I did it as a joke one time, with Will Pugh from Cartel.
Uh-huh.
I was like, now time for the lightning round. And he's like, okay. But no, I just I asked on Twitter if anybody had any questions for you.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll ask you a couple questions if you don't mind.
Okay, let's do the Twitter.
So Justin George asks, Why do fans on social media always refer to you as dad?
Oh, I don't know. That's not something I particularly like.
But that must stem from something. Like, that's kind of random.
Yeah, well, I don't, well, it's not necessarily just me. I think it's just something that people in bands get called regularly. And yeah, it's definitely not specific to me. But yeah, I don't know where it stems from. It sounds creepy to me for some reason. Like, I can't put my finger on it.
You're like 10 years younger than me, though. I hope no one starts calling me dad.
Yeah.
I'm more of a dad age than you are, but I thought maybe like at one point you like spelt your name wrong. Like you accidentally typed D-A-D instead of D-A-N.
Nope.
No. Okay. So yeah, it's just a weird thing.
Yeah. Just a weird thing that people do. I get kind of creeped out sometimes.
Yeah. I don't know. Emily Bass asks, did you ever wear braces because your smile could end wars?
I did have braces for a couple years when I was in high school, or not high school, junior high, and then I had a couple retainers. Actually, I had the ones that you pop out and that have like the really disgusting like piece of plastic that I feel is supposed to simulate gums.
Yes.
And actually one night, cause I fucking hated them so much. Cause, my cousin was my orthodontist and he said I had to wear them all day, indefinitely. I could only take them out when I eat basically. And I'd always have a lisp and I built up this like subconscious hatred to the point where one night I sleptwalked, except I remember everything about it. Like I was lucid to some extent, and yes. I remember getting up in the middle of the night. I went to go pee, and then I remember sitting there or standing there in front of the toilet. I was peeing, and then I just reach into my mouth, take out both the top and bottom part of my retainer, and just drop it in the toilet and flush it. And then I walked back to my bed and just went to sleep. Like, you know, nothing just happened. And then I remember the next day getting up and then like feeling in my mouth. I'm like, wait, my retainer's like not in my mouth. And then I remembered, I was like, oh my God, did that really fucking happen? And and then I went downstairs and I told my mom, I'm like, yo, like, I think I did something really stupid yesterday. And
yeah, that's an expensive mistake.
Yeah. Yeah. So then I went back and then my cousin was like, okay, I'm going to put something in your mouth that you can't take out. And then he gave me like the wires that, you just put behind your teeth. And then I ended up breaking those too, eating ice cream, and just fucking broke off. And then he put another one in that was actually like kind of crowns around my teeth that looked really weird. But yes, in short, I did have braces.
Yeah, I had braces. I had braces too, actually. But I guess the technology wasn't as good as it was after. So I only had the shitty retainer, like the one you flushed down the toilet.
Yeah,
And I never wore it. And then my bottom teeth went all crooked, and they're still crooked.
Yeah, was it from your wisdom teeth growing in?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess it was maybe. But I don't know, or maybe it was just moving around. But my top teeth are straight. My bottom teeth are pretty crooked. But
yeah,
whatever, dude.
Oh,
all right,
well.
One more question from Colby D. He asks, how did the covers with This Wildlife come about, and was it challenging?
We were actually going to do like a whole split with This Wildlife, where it would be like one song would be an original and then another song would be like the covers. But then, and we had it all recorded. We had a cover and everything. Everything was ready, set to go. And then I don't think that all of the legal stuff was able to be kind of figured out between Fearless
you're
and
on
Epitaph.
Different labels. Yeah, Fearless and Epitaph, yeah.
Yeah, because we were going to release it in January just to kind of be something for both bands to put out, like, while we're waiting for records to come out and stuff. You know, just something fun because they're our boys.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we've never done a split before. So it was like, okay, like, it's something that we get to do that's cool and, you know, something that we get to cement in our discography with some people that we consider, like, really good friends of ours.
Yeah.
But because of, like, all the legal stuff, then I guess it couldn't come out until September. And I was like, well, what's the point? Cause we both cover, cause then I think both of our records will be out cause they recorded a record recently too. And then, and like the cover for the split was based off of both of our first records. So then to release something like after the second record comes out, and then it's
confusing for people to understand it. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause then in that sense, it would just make more sense to wait and then cover something off of each other's second records. But you know, it's a shame because that the song that This Wildlife recorded for the split was absolutely phenomenal. And I hope that they use it for their record, cause it was too fucking good. Like,
yeah, I mean, or like, if not, you know, maybe down the road, like, you know, in a year and a half, or, you know, when you're at the end of your cycle, you could do it then, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But it must have been cool. Like, you take, I heard the cover you did, and, you know, they're an acoustic band. Mm. So adding like full instrumentation, that must have been pretty fun.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was awesome. It was a lot of fun. I had put like the shell together for it, as a demo in Logic, like over the summer last year. And then Dave and then our drummer Brian sat down, because I had gotten like 3/4 of the song like done and figured out, and then they sat down and figured the rest of it out, went in and recorded, and then, you know, then we got it all together. But no, it was a lot of fun to do, and definitely something different for us, which I thought was awesome.
No, I mean, I the split, like, it's another thing. We've done a couple splits. We did a split with August Burns Red, where we each covered, it was called 4 Minutes Being Cool.
Mm.
And we did a cover of the Get Up Kids, and they did a cover of Saves the Day.
Oh, fuck yeah.
So we did it for like Record Store Day, and that was a lot of fun. And I wish more bands did, you know, splits and you know, collabs and stuff. Obviously there's Silvertooth. I don't know if you've heard about this.
Oh, I have. I have heard about Silvertooth. I'm upset because I was out for a week on Warped last year, and I didn't get to see it. I don't think that you guys did it while I was out there.
No, we just did it twice. We did it in Scranton because we knew Scranton was going to be like a terrible day. So we were like, how can we just make Scranton more fun? So that's why we did it. And then it was a lot of fun. So, I mean, that's like, I believe being in a band should be fun all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And the second, I always said, the second that I'm not having fun anymore or that this feels like a fucking job, I'm done. And that has not happened to me yet. So you guys seem like that kind of a band too, though.
Yeah, I mean,
you guys don't seem to take things like too seriously or too to heart, you know?
No, we never really had, I feel like that only really happens if like you start a band with like those intentions, you know, that you're going to be doing all this shit and like you're going to be the biggest band in the world. And, you know, but we never had like any of these illusions. Like when we started, it was just like, you know, we're going to play in our free time. And if anything happens, it happens. And if not, right, then, you know, whatever, we gave it a shot. Cause I remember actually the day that Kyle had given me a call asking if I wanted to get together with them and see if it would be a good fit. I had submitted my college application for Illinois State University. And, actually I didn't pay to have it submitted. I still had to do that, but I had filled it out and, you know, that was the next step, to pay $40 so that somebody could review a stupid application for me to try to go to school. But, you know, we never had that, you know, clouding up like what we wanted to do in the beginning. So, you know, we've had such a great time. We've been so fortunate to have what we have, you know, cause like those three years ago when we did the West Coast Dates of Warped tour, like that was something where it's like, what like else do we do after this? Like, how does this get better? You know, where do we go from here? You know, right, there's nothing else, you know? And, so then to get to do the full Warped again and then get to do it again, you know, a third time this year, even, and to have all the opportunity, like, because we've got to play with some of our favorite bands and, got to play some ridiculous shows and share some amazing moments with all of these people that give a shit about our music. And we got to make so many friends and people that, you know, that we're going to have around hopefully for a really long time in our lives. Like, that's something that all of us are incredibly grateful for, you know?
So, right. Absolutely, man. Well, I mean, and it's just starting, I think. Like, I feel like, you know, I feel like this is going to be the record that's really going to take you guys to the next level. I can't wait to hear it. Yeah, I mean, you guys are nominated for like APMA awards, like Artist of the Year. Like, that's pretty, that must be pretty surreal. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you guys don't seem like the type of band that would really like care about that kind of stuff, but it's, I mean, you know, awards are cool and all.
No, I mean, it's definitely flattering.
Yeah, that's the word for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because I mean, because granted, it might not be like our cup of tea, but AP has been very, very, very awesome to us, and you know, to be considered for that is crazy, and it's so cool because, you know, because I grew up reading AP and stuff, so to be involved with them to the extent that we have been is fucking awesome. So I think I'm actually, I don't know if I can say it, I will, but I mean, because I'm going to be presenting this year
good.
Too. So
that's awesome.
But maybe that was a leak. I don't know. I don't know if
whatever.
They'll care that I said, you know, it's not that big a deal.
I don't think so. I mean, here's the thing. Like, if you guys are nominated for Artist of the Year, you guys are going to be there. I mean, it's obviously like they do it around Warped Tour and you guys are on Warped Tour. So I don't think anyone's going to be shocked if you are presenting an award at all. If you told us who was going to win, then maybe
that would be kind of troubling if I did.
If you knew that, yes. Yeah, no, I don't think they know. I don't think anyone knows. I don't think they even, like, I don't even think they tell the bands, like, the day of that like, the winners that they're going to win.
I decide who wins. That's how it works.
Yeah, well, you can say whatever name you want to say, I guess.
Yeah, because I print it out beforehand. I put it in my pocket, and then I swap it out in the envelope. And then I
perfect.
Open it up, and it's like, oh, yeah, proof. You know, I knew who won. I did it.
There you go.
Gold star.
Gold star. Good for you.
Yes.
Well, dude, thank you so much for jumping on with me today. Here's to some great weather in Chicago.
Yes, yes.
A little bit of time off. Continuing to withdraw. Continuing your quest on a smoke-free lifestyle.
Yes.
Hang in there. I know it can be hard. And of course, man, like, you guys are going to have a big year with Warped Tour and everything. And I'll come out and hang, and I'll come say hi.
Yeah, fuck yeah. Yeah, thank you for having me.
Of course, man.
I wanted to share one thing with you.
Please share.
Because I remember that Warped Tour that we first did, the Ventura date. If I remember correctly, Tobin had you guys host the Hopeless Party out of the back of your bus.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did, yeah.
I remember him coming up to me, absolutely shit-faced. And saying,
this is Eric Tobin. So yes. People know this is Eric Tobin, who basically runs Hopeless Records.
Yeah, and he comes up to me completely shit faced. He's like, because this was before we had signed to Fearless. So we were being courted, and he comes up to me. He's like, Dan, this is over there, Silverstein's bus, and you go over there and you talk to the man, and he'll give you anything you want, and you don't have to give him any money. Don't worry about him. He will give you all the alcohol you want. And I was like, okay, you sound like you need to go to bed. So I'm going to let you do that. And that night, yes, I was very in a weird state after that. And I don't know why I'm sharing it, but I am. And it was fun.
So we partied, because that, yes. I'll admit that was a bit of a foggy night for me. Too.
Yes. Well, I ended up... on a lawn chair, like I was staring at the ground outside of like Mazda Flames Bandwagon, just staring at the ground, because I felt like if I looked anywhere, I got the spins and would fall and die. Uh-oh. At any moment. I ended up throwing up on the ground, and then I got a little bit of vomit on my shoes. This is very minuscule, something I could have next day just wiped off perfect, good as new. But, I decided to take off my shoes and throw them just willy-nilly wherever, and that parking lot is all rocks. So then we had walk back and find the van, and I walked barefoot through there. So thank you for that. I appreciate that.
Yeah, sorry for the free booze, man. No, I remember we set up we didn't have anything to make a bar out of, so we made a bar out of like dummy cabs that we had in the trailer, and then we played music through a guitar amp. We didn't have a speaker or anything, so we managed to plug an iPod into an orange, you know, like Rocker Verb head or something through the cab, and it sounded pretty good. Probably terrible for the amp, but whatever.
That is fucking sick. But yeah, it's fine. It's fine as long as it's not too loud. Don't blow it out.
Yeah, that's absolutely true, man. No, dude, thanks for sharing that with me, and thanks for doing this. And I'll definitely try to come by a Warped Tour date, and we'll hit up the barbecue. We'll do it all proper, and we'll relive that date in 2013.
Yeah,
but maybe just not quite the same way.
No, I would not. No, I would like to be a little more here.
Nice, man. Well, hey, thanks again, and all the best with the new record.
All right. Thank you, Shane. It was nice talking to you. Thank you
for
having me.
Very nice talking to you, too. Of course, Dan. Thank you.
All right. Have a good one.
You too, man.
I'll see ya.
So there's my conversation with Dan. Great dude. A lot of fun. We spent a little time after the interview actually talking about everything, and definitely going to go out on Warped Tour. We're going to try to have some fun again. Hopefully no pukey this time on his part, but I love that story so much. And man, Eric Tobin, I wonder if Eric listens to this. What a great dude. One of my favorite people in music. Hopeless Records is just a great record company. So many great people over there. Anyways, next week on Monday, we will be back with another episode. As always, make sure you're subscribed. And if you want to help out the show, go on iTunes and write a review, preferably 5 stars. Give me some love. And hey, thanks again so much for listening to this. I'm going to leave you with a tune as always. Here is a brand new Real Friends track from the upcoming record, which is out May 27th, I believe. So go pre-order that shit. Here is the song, Colder Quicker. It's a great tune. Enjoy. Peace and love. We'll see you next week.
I've got more complaints, more than pleasantries to say. Every monument is idle and rearranged.
It's got